Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
And welcome to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins. Glad you could join us today as we spend about an hour talking about evangelization, talking about discipleship. Really, it gets down to we're talking about Jesus and following him and offering tips on how to evangelize, how to share your faith at home, neighborhood, at work, but also how to really get your A game out there with the Lord too. And that's your relationship with the Lord. You've heard that saying before, if you can't give away what you don't have. And if you don't have anything with the Lord, what are you going to give away to people other than just an idea of what religion is? And you know as well as I do, people are not asking questions about that today, are they? They're not just walking up to you at the mall and saying, tell me what makes you tick. But we've got to live lives in such a way where we become attractive to people. And maybe you've encountered that in your own life. Maybe you at work, somebody, you know, grabbed you and took you to the side and said, hey, Frank, hey, Susan, can I ask you a question? I know you're a man of faith. I know you're a woman of faith. Tell me a little bit about that. I'm impressed with your family. I'm impressed with your life. I'm impressed with how you deal with board meetings and making decisions and even how you might have to let people go. You did it in a different way. And all of that comes from your relationship with the Lord. But there's a big obstacle in the way of our relationship with the Lord that I want to talk about today, and that is the topic of your appetites. That's right, your appetites. It can be a struggle of the heart. Appetites, and when I talk about appetites, you naturally will think of food, drink, and our appetites certainly can get out of control when it comes to eating, drinking, consuming things with our mouth. But there's a whole nother level of appetites that gets us in trouble too and distracts us from the call on our life to share the good news of Jesus Christ and to live balanced lives, and that is consumerism. That's right. It's things. It's the shiny thing that you got to have it, you know, because that 256 gigabyte iPad just isn't going to be enough room. And you need more. You need more. So there's this constant pull in our lives towards consuming, not just food and drink, but consuming things. And I know I've been victim to that. I admit it. You know, I go through a binge here and there where it's not food, but it might be electronics. You know, I'm buying these different electronic gadgets or, you know, you take any hobby that you have and you can always accessorize it. You know, I like to play the guitar a little bit, and certainly not worth bragging about, and you don't want me at your family reunion for the entertainment. But there's all kinds of gadgets you can get at some of these guitar shops that accessorize your guitar, from cases to tuners to picks to different kinds of strings and music and apps, and it just goes on and on and on. And after a while, you have to ask yourself, how much is enough really? Is this really adding substantially to my life, or is it taking me off of what I really need to be focusing on, which could be your family, or I might be at work? I know when the internet started to really boom, a lot of employers were very, very concerned because there was a new distraction at work where they're employees were playing games online, looking up stuff they shouldn't have been looking up. They were on their Facebook and doing their own email and texting. When the boss walked around or the supervisor, they would quickly put that mouse up in the upper left-hand corner. It was a screensaver that looked like a spreadsheet. Thought we were fooling the old boss there. But a lot of things really grab our attention, don't they? So let's talk today, shall we, about how do we go about this issue of appetites. What is the problem? How did this start, you know, clear back in the Garden of Eden, and then it's passed on to us today? But how do you actually confront this in your life? Is there a solution? Is there something that you can do to bring simplicity to your life and to get on target when it comes to the goals in your life? I think there is. I do. And I think the key is Jesus. And the key is looking at how he lived his life. So I'm looking forward to talking about this with you today. That's all we're going to talk about is appetites and overcoming it. So if this is something that has really kind of caught your attention or that title catches your attention, just stick with me. Maybe you want to pull over on the side of the road or call the boss and say, I'm going to be in just a little bit late. I got to listen to this. And if you have to go, which I understand, you just come back to Relevant Radio and you listen to the rebroadcasts of the Rediscover Hour. My name's Jeff Cavins, and we're going to be back in just a moment to talk about curbing the appetites and bringing our life back into some kind of balance. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. Rediscover.
I'm Dr. James Kohler of Kohler Family Dentistry. We recently expanded our offices and staff to offer your family a new dental experience focused on your comfort and convenience. We can fix many dental problems in just one day, and our experienced staff delivers modern dental techniques comfortably.
Kohler Dental supports the pro-life efforts of Abria Pregnancy Resources and encourages you and your family to make a new Mother's Day weekend tradition by participating in the Life is Wonderful Family Fun Run and Walk on Saturday, May 7th. Join them on Raspberry Island in St. Paul, beginning at 9. Come join them and honor your mom and women who choose life.
I hope to see you there. I plan on being there to honor the memory of my mother. It's a great time of year to see us at James Kohler Family Dentistry. Appointments are available this week. Call 651-777-6454, 651-777-6454, or relevantradio.com, keyword dentist.
It feels like a brand new day, and I know I'm not the same. I see you, and I need you, and I know I couldn't leave you if I tried.
We all have that sense deep down inside. I need Jesus. I need him in my life. But there's one big problem. I need a lot of other things, too. Or at least, I think I do. And I find myself caught up in this American dream, this consumerism that can really, really wrap us up, tie us up, and keep us from what we're really called to do. I'm Jeff Cavins, and I'm going to be talking this hour about appetites and how to curb the appetites. And to start off with, I think we got to go all the way back to the garden, hey? Go all the way back there and figure out where did this thing go wrong to begin with. One of the beautiful things about Bible study is that when you do it and you hear from God and you understand what he's saying, it's so freeing to you. It gives you tools to deal with life, like being an overconsumer, not just talking about food, but consuming things. And it's just such a gift, Scripture, isn't it? It's a guide. It's a counselor. It's like our private counselor. You know, Jesus is going to counsel us. He's going to show us how to walk in freedom. Well, there are two aspects to our lives. There's no doubt about that. You have the temporal order here on earth, a temporal life, and that is you wake up at 6 in the morning and you go to bed about 11 o'clock at night, and in between you're doing all kinds of things. You're going to work. You're getting some money. And you're buying stuff, and your life is slowly being filled with more and more things. But what I've noticed, maybe you've noticed it too, is that it's always more exciting on this side of obtaining something. You know, it's like the hunt. And once you get it, it's not as exciting anymore. It's like that car you've been thinking about for weeks and weeks and weeks. And once you get it, the thrill is gone, you know, as B.B. King once said. So that's what we struggle with in our lives. But where does it go back to? Well, we've got this temporal aspect of our lives, this earth, but we also have a whole nother part of eternal life. And that's after you take your last breath and you live on throughout eternity. And if you look at your life in eternity in heaven with God, and then ask yourself, am I going to live in heaven like I'm living here? The answer is probably no. But yet that's one of the major tenets of the Lord's Prayer, isn't it? You know, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What are the priorities of heaven? You know, what is considered cool in heaven? You ever thought of it like that? What's cool in heaven? What's valued in heaven? Am I living my life here on earth as in heaven? Well, I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I'm not. And it's this balance, isn't it, between this temporal and the eternal. And I think sometimes, you know, we would say, I believe in the eternal. I believe in heaven. Don't get me wrong. I want to go there. Just not right now. But I love heaven. I want to go there. But there's so much in the way here. Well, let's go back to the garden for a second and see what exactly happened with the fall of Adam and Eve. And I'll try to simplify this because I think that when you hear it, like I'm going to share with you now, you really get it. It's like, okay, I kind of understand now why I do what I do. And I understand the DNA of sin. If you go back, you see this apparent wonderful relationship that Adam and Eve have with God. They walk with God in the cool of the day. It's a Garden of Eden. I mean, this is a nice place, nice relationship. But they're created in the image and likeness of God, which means they have a will. They can reason. You know, they make choices, and they have the capacity to love and to offer themselves up in love. And God comes to them, and he says to them, you can eat freely of any tree in the garden, but the one tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you can't eat from that one. Because if you eat from that one, you'll die. You will die. So the price is death. To disobey God back in the garden, the result is death. Now, sometimes people, they read the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, and they read about Methuselah, you know, over 700 years old. They read about 900 years old. You've got others that live 500, 600, 700 years, and people say, I don't know about that. That's a long time. Are you sure? I have a hard time believing that they live that long. And that makes me wonder. Well, that shouldn't be what makes you wonder. What should make you wonder is they're dying. That should be the startling thing. That should be the shocker. My word, they're dying because they are created to live for eternity. But God is going to give them a choice. And if you eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you're going to die. You're going to die. So no doubt Adam kind of tells Eve the ground rules for this beautiful garden. And we got tremendous freedom here. We got choices, but we don't eat from that one tree. That's what God is asking us to do. He's asking us to obey him. He's asking us to live our lives in conformity to his will. And it looks like, from all we can gather, that if they had walked according to his will, things would have not turned out the way they did. But you know the story. In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 6, Eve gets a good, healthy glimpse at the fruit of that tree. And what did she see? You know, sometimes we equate sin with things that are blatantly illegal, immoral. We're talking about adultery. We're talking about bank robbery. We're talking about stealing, whatever it might be. I think sometimes we kind of relegate sin to those categories. But if you look at what Eve observed about the fruit, it doesn't fit into those big ticket categories at all. There's no murder. There's no adultery, fornication. There's no stealing. There's no bearing false witness. Nothing like that at all. In fact, the three things that she noticed about the tree are pretty attractive. Number one is that she noticed that the tree was beautiful, very beautiful, good to look at. Nothing wrong with that. God created all the beauty in the universe. You go out there to Grand Canyon. You go out to Israel. You go to Hawaii. You go to out of Banff up in Alberta, up in Canada, and you're going to see beauty, really, really beautiful stuff. And the second thing she noticed was that it tasted good. It's good to the taste. Now, how she knew that, you know, before actually eating it, that's one of those questions I'm going to ask God when they get to heaven. How did she know that it was tasty? Maybe just it was intuitive. That's a tasty piece of fruit on that tree. But number one, it's beautiful. Number two, it tastes good. And number three, it makes one wise. It makes one wise. So what is not to like about that? So there's three things. Beauty, tastes good, makes one wise. And what did she do? She ate. After she confronted the enemy, and the enemy said, what did God say? She said, well, he said we can't eat of the fruit of that tree or even touch it, lest we die. And the enemy said, look, you're not going to die. You see, God knows that in the day that you eat of it, you're going to become like him, knowing the difference between good and evil. You see, God's withholding. God is keeping something back from you, Eve. And she ended up eating it, and she gave some to her husband, and he ate it, and then we had the fall. And the fall was catastrophic. Death has now entered the human race, and Adam and Eve are going to be booted out of the garden, and they're going to start dying, and that's going to change their relationship with God. They're going to hide from him. It's going to change their relationship with each other. They're going to hide. They're going to clothe themselves, and we start using one another, and it changes their relationship with creation. You start to abuse and take advantage of the wonderful planet that we've been given, pollution and so forth. And so everything now is turned around. But look at this a little bit more, carefully. It's not just, as one preacher once said, he said, the problem wasn't the fruit in the tree, it was the pear on the ground. And that's Adam and Eve. And what they ended up doing, let me give you an example. Let me give you an illustration before I bring that point up. St. Augustine does this, and he does a great job of it in his book, The Confessions, where he goes through and he confesses everything that he's done in his life, and he's done some doozies. But the one thing that really bothered him was one day he and his friends were walking down the road, and they saw a pear tree at a farmer's place, and they stole the pears, and then they threw them at a bunch of pigs. Yeah, that was the one that confounded him. Stole pears, throw them at a bunch of pigs, and he asked himself, why in the world did I do that? Why did I do that? And his first conclusion seems right, but then he said, no, that can't be the case. His first conclusion was, well, I did it just to do something evil, just for evil's sake. And he said, no, that's not good philosophy. Good philosophy says, which by the way, good philosophy is the foundation of good theology. The good philosophy says that we make choices because we want to be happy. We make choices that are going to enhance life, not hurt life, not going to kill us. So he didn't do it just to be evil. So why did he do it? You know what his conclusion was? His conclusion was that he wanted the affirmation and the love of his friends. That's why he did it. That's why he stole the fruit. He wanted to be part of the gang. He wanted to belong to his friends. So look at the DNA. Look at the DNA of this sin, the architecture of this sin. He is going after something that he thinks is going to make him happy. Now, if you look at any sin that we get involved in our life, you're going to see a movement towards happiness. G.K. Chesterton said that every man that knocks on the door of a brothel is looking for God. It's true. Looking for happiness. And you look at every sin in our life, whether it is bank robbery, whether it is fornication, whether it's lying, cheating, stealing, bearing false witness, all of it is an attempt to find some kind of happiness, and we go about it the wrong way. We grasp the created thing. You robbed that bank. Why did you rob the bank? Well, you know that classic answer, because that's where the money is. Well, yeah, you robbed the bank because you were searching for security. You were searching for happiness. You went about it all wrong. It's called sin. And sin, my friend, is easily described as this. It's going after the creation rather than the creator. It's putting the created thing before the creator, who is God. You see, you can make an idol out of anything. It was fruit in the Garden of Eden. They put their hope, they put their trust in that. And they grasped at it themselves rather than listening to God and walking according to his ways. Now, you could take that to one of the big ticket items. We'll talk about adultery. What is that? Well, that is not an attempt to screw up your life. Never is. It's searching for happiness. It's searching for joy. Same with robbing the bank. But you ended up really messing up your life as a result of it. And that's what sin does. See, sin promises the world, and it delivers hell. It promises the world, and it delivers hell. It will mess your life up, and the end game, the end goal of sin is death. And that's the end game of death. Even if we can start off with little sins, the goal is to increase that to where we move out of venial sin, which weakens your relationship with God, into mortal sin, which breaks your relationship with God. You see, the end of sin, it's like it's got a mind of its own. It wants you dead. And when you put things before the Creator, when you put created things before the Creator, then you have a problem. You have a problem. And what happens so often is that it complicates our lives. Now, it's not fruit that we're talking about here, unless you got a really strange problem and you just can't stop eating fruit. And fruit has become a god in your life. But let's think for a moment. What could be an obstacle in your life to God's grace? What could be an idol that maybe you've set up in your own life? Well, it could be a motorcycle. It could be a car. It could be shoes. It could be Louis Vuitton purses, especially when you get up to about 14, 15, 20 of them. You know, it could be a lake home. Now, are any of these things bad? No, not at all. Nothing. There's nothing intrinsically evil or good about a purse or shoes. But it can become an idol in your life. In anything, canoes, shotguns, hunting equipment, bowling balls, clothes, you name it. And so we get into trouble when we begin to let our appetites run free and consume and consume and consume, thinking that it's going to make us happy. I remember years ago, I was new in ministry, and I was in Bloomington, and I went by the old Wally McCarthy's, Lindahl Olds on 494 across from Southtown. I remember Bill Deal used to go out there and give away free hot dogs and coffee and sell cars. And I got in my mind, I was going to get this one car. I was about 27 years old. I was going to buy this one car. And that's all I could think about was that one car. And I thought about it and thought about it. And when you know, driving around the city, that car seemed to pop up everywhere. Well, right when you want to buy a certain model, you just realize they're at every corner. Everybody else wants that one, and they want the same color that I want. I went in there, and I knew that this was going to be very, very tight on the budget. Very tight. But I saw myself in that car. I imagined myself in that car. And the advertising industry, they do this all the time, don't they, with us. And I went in there, and I could only afford at that point, I think it was like $210 a month or something like that for the car. Well, wouldn't you know it, I went after the one that had all the bells and whistles. First car I ever had with air conditioning. I thought, you know what? I'm 27 years old. I deserve air conditioning. So I ended up going to about $270 a month or something like that for the payment. And I was nervous, especially because I hadn't told my wife that I was going to spend that much more. And that's what you really get nervous about. Sometimes I can deal with God, but it's my wife. She's the one that's going to be really upset about this. So I ended up buying it. I've been thinking about this car for weeks and weeks and weeks. I drove off the lot and on my way back to our apartment, and I got to tell you, the joy was gone. It was gone because I suddenly realized what I got myself into. 5 years of these kind of payments. And man, it changed quickly. It was promising me the world, but now I was living in reality. I'm going to have to make all these payments, and the car isn't as great as I thought it was going to be. I made an idol out of that car. I was pursuing happiness, but I ended up falling into a terrible trap in my life. Now, this happens in our lives a lot, doesn't it? It happens in our lives an awful lot. And even back in Paul's day, it happened. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, if you're one of those that likes to write these verses down, Paul said something to the Corinthians that I thought it really fits in here. And it goes back to the Garden of Eden. You know what he said? He said, Corinthians, I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. Let me read that again, because that says something very, very important. If you feel, my friend, that right now in your life is too complicated, it has become so complicated, so busy, so overstuffed with stuff and things, this might be the reason. If your life is no longer a life of simplicity and pure devotion to Christ, but it's now complex, could be because the serpent has deceived you by his craftiness, just like he deceived Eve. What did Paul say? He said, "But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ." The Apostle John, he understood all three of those things too. Beauty, good to the taste, good to look at, makes one wise. He spoke in his third smallest epistle, 1 John chapter 2. He said, guys, don't love the world. Don't love the world or the things in the world. That's not where you want to put your heart. Don't love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Isn't that an interesting point? He says that the world, everything, all the stuff that we're so interested in, it passes away. It passes away. I remember a song by Scott Wesley Brown years ago in the Christian contemporary market, where he wrote a song about dumps, you know, the landfill. And he talks about how everything that you work so hard for, everything that caught your eye, everything that caught your attention, he said, today is most likely in a landfill. It's in a dump. The thing that you gave up time with your family for, your money, your hard-earned money, it's in a landfill now. Think about it. It's all going to end up there, my friend, because you see, it doesn't last for eternity. It's only for a time. But your soul and the souls of your family, they're going to last forever and ever and ever. C.S. Lewis, he understood this basic principle. You know what he said in the book, The Problem of Pain, which I really recommend that you read that book, The Problem of Pain. It's a very powerful book. He said, all things that have ever deeply possessed you should have been but hints of heaven, tantalizing glimpses, promises never quite fulfilled, echoes that died away just as they caught your ear. He said, if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the more probable explanation is that I was made for another world. Earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy it, but only to arouse it, to suggest the real thing. So that's one of the things that we can do to combat appetites, which is what we're talking about here today, is how to deal with the appetites, not just eating, but consumerism, is that if it really catches your attention, then be aware that this might be something that is arousing in you something eternal, that your heart is really craving. It could be. It could be. And I think that, you know, so often we in life here, you know, the meal that Jesus really wants to give you, the thing that he really wants to satisfy you with, is a relationship. And in Mass, we receive the Eucharist. It's really the source of satisfaction. It's a source of grace. And I think sometimes in our lives, we put God second, third, and fourth, and we fill our lives with things that are not going to get that return. It reminds me of going into a Mexican restaurant. Hang in there with me. You'll know what I'm talking about here in a minute. In fact, this happened not too long ago. I went to a Mexican restaurant in Minneapolis, And the lady shows up, and what does she bring? A great big basket of chips, tortilla chips, and salsa. I mean, a big bag, not a bag, but a big basket of tortilla chips. And then she puts the menus down. Well, as we start looking through the menus, by the time we're getting ready to order, we've already said, yeah, we'll take another basket of chips. And what happens is that we fill up on the chips and salsa. We eat so much that we have no more room for the main course. And I think that's what happens by the appetites here on Earth that grab our attention, whether it's electronics or toys or clothing or experiences or whatever it might be. We're just so full of so many beautiful, tasty things that make us wise, we don't have any more room for the main course, and we miss out on the main course. And that happens to us quite a bit, I think, in our lives. I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, I want to talk to you about an interesting study, because we want to talk about, you know, well, what do we do? How do we curb our appetite? How do we deal with this appetite? Jesus is the key, but I want to come back. I want to share with you a very interesting story. It was actually a study done about children and resisting marshmallows. Now, it's an interesting story. You don't want to miss this. So don't go away. When we come back, I'll tell you the marshmallow story, and then we'll get into the solution of what do we do to curb this appetite in our life. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
May is the month of Mary, and more than 130 college seminarians invite you to celebrate her queenship on Sunday, May 1st. Hello, this is Father Michael Becker, rector of St. John Vianney College Seminary. Every year, our seminarians celebrate our Blessed Mother at our spring Mass and May crowning. This special event begins with Mass in the St. Thomas Aquinas Chapel, followed by brunch and a program in the Anderson Student Center on the campus of the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. I personally invite you to join our seminarians and guests to celebrate Mary, learn more about SJV, and to support our mission of providing essential training today for tomorrow's Catholic priests. An RSVP is required before April 22nd. Sponsorship opportunities are still available. Please call 651-962-5967 or visit relevantradio.com, keyword May Crowning, to learn more about the Spring Mass and May Crowning on Sunday, May 1st. St. John Vianney College Seminary. Men in Christ, men of the church, men for others.
I felt forgiveness in the deep recesses of my soul. I was so empty, and now I'm full. The world is cold and so.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins. Talking about, that's a beautiful song, isn't it? Talking about the appetites and curbing the appetites, not only what you eat, but what you consume. And the song right there just says it so well, right? You know that I feel so empty. And have you ever had certain foods that you ate, but just a little bit after that, you still were hungry, just didn't fill you, or you eat junk food and it fills you and you can't get to the main course? That's what we're talking about. Well, I mentioned this marshmallow study, and maybe you can identify with it. We're talking about the appetites and curbing those and bringing them in line with God's will in our life. And the key is Jesus. That really is the key. But this little story, true study that actually took place back in the late 1960s, and by Walter Mischel. He began conducting his famous marshmallow experiment. It really does illustrate where we're at, because part of curbing our appetite is knowing how to resist and not falling into the trap of instant gratification now, but pushing that off. And sometimes when you push off instant gratification, it just kind of goes away. But the real gratification that you're looking for is heaven. We got to live our lives really smart here on earth. Well, here's how that study goes. It's really, really interesting. This Walter Mischel, he placed a marshmallow in front of a succession of four-year-olds. So he's got four-year-olds sitting at these tables, and he places a marshmallow in front of them on the table. And remember, they're four-year-olds. Mischel told them that they were free to eat the marshmallows simply by ringing a bell after he left the room. So they had the marshmallow and they had a little bell. And he said, look, I'm going to leave the room. If you want to eat the marshmallow, just ring the bell and you can eat the marshmallow. But then he said to these four-year-olds, he says, however, if they are able to wait until he returns, he told them, they could have two marshmallows. So you understand the name of the game here. They got one marshmallow in front of him and a bell. He's going to leave the room. He's not telling him how long he's going to be gone. But if they want to eat it, they can certainly eat it. They don't have to wait till he comes back. Just ring the bell. But if they want two marshmallows, you can imagine how excited they got about that. Then they have to wait until he returns, till he comes back. Well, here's the results, and it's interesting. 70% of the children gave up in less than a minute. Isn't that something? Less than a minute, 70% of them gave up. Only 30% were able to wait 15 minutes. That's all he stayed away for was 15 minutes. 30% of them waited for 15 minutes, and they got two marshmallows. So here's the kind of the wisdom behind this 1960s experiment, that they interviewed the kids, they watched the kids, they observed the kids' behavior, and what they found out was that the kids that waited did not stare at the marshmallow. The 70% who could not wait 15 minutes and get two marshmallows, they stared at it. They simply stared at the marshmallow, and all that energy was used up to restrain themselves, and they ended up ringing the bell. So the energy that they used up was focused on not eating that marshmallow. Now, the 30% that got two marshmallows, guess what they did? They found something else to occupy their attention. They talked to each other. They looked around the room. They might have stood up, walked around a little bit, but they didn't sit there and stare at the marshmallow. They were the ones that got two. So the idea here is that if we're pulled away, if we're pulled to anything that provides instant gratification, even when we know we'd get a bigger reward for delaying, like heaven, we also are quick to respond and consume. And one of the reasons that we do this and we find our lives so occupied at the mall and ordering online and the QVC virus and all of that is that we are staring at this stuff in our culture. It has preoccupied our hearts and our minds and our time and our hobbies and everything. And that's what is entrapping us. And what Paul said to the Corinthians, remember that? He said that the simplicity is gone. Your life has become now very complicated. I like what people do after it becomes complicated. They suddenly become very, very giving to the goodwill. And they clean out their closets and their garages and their storage rooms, and they bring everything to the goodwill, or they have a garage sale. But just a short period after giving it all away, man, we're back at the mall, aren't we? We're back at the mall and we're getting all that stuff again. So the marshmallow story is interesting because it really tells us something important about the energy we have and what we give our attention to. Basically, here's my message. Stop staring at marshmallows. If you're having a hard time fighting the food, if you're having a hard time fighting consumerism, stop staring at the marshmallows. And let's look beyond that and see what God has for us in our lives. So let's look at the solution for the few minutes that we have, a few things that we can do. We do know that if you are caught up in consumerism, number one, it's going to lead to a dysfunctional relationship with God. It's going to lead to a dysfunctional relationship with man and creation. But it also begins to define who we are. If we allow things or food or drink to define who we are, then we're going to be in big trouble because we're going to be divided. We're going to be divided between two opinions. One, I'm a daughter of God. I'm a son of God. I'm a child of Jesus. I'm a child of God. Jesus is my Lord and Savior. But if we allow possessions to define us, we are divided. We're divided. You know, I used to buy books all the time, and I had the excuse that, well, they're theology books and Bible books, and after all, this is what I do. So I bought so many books based on the title. They looked juicy, you know. I'm gonna buy that book and read it. So I had stacks of books in my thousands of volume library, and I didn't get around to reading a lot of them. But I also bought books that I was interested in, and I thought I would someday really get my arms around that topic. In other words, I bought books for who I thought I was going to become, and I never read them. And so I ended up years later actually giving many, many of them away to the seminary because I was not going to get to those topics, and I wasn't going to become an expert on those topics. I bought the books based on who I thought I was going to be. I gave them away based on who I am, who I was. And my life became cluttered. My office became cluttered with all of these books. And in a way, the possessions defined me. People would come into my library and say, wow, look at all of those books. And I didn't bother to tell them, well, I haven't read most of them. But they were defining me. Maybe I was smart, maybe insightful. And that's the reward right there. It's amazing how we get tricked into this. I like what Paul also said to the Corinthians. He said, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Do all to the glory of God. And I would also encourage you to read a little bit about Solomon, because Solomon is one of those guys who he had unlimited resources and he could actually experiment with becoming happy and fulfilling his life. And he actually did it. He had amazing resources and time and power. And his conclusion at the end of this experiment, if they had wine and entertainment and gardens and everything you can imagine, his conclusion was to fear God. That's really where it's at. Walk with God. You want to read about it? He wrote a book. It's called Ecclesiastes. Just go in there and you can find the searching of a man looking for happiness and not finding it in the things of this world, but only finding it in God. In finding it in God. And that is that's what God has called us to. You know, there's a huge cost in overindulging in our lives. You see that in Matthew 19 with the rich young man who's very sad, very, very sad, because he couldn't let go of his possessions. And it cost him. You know, he wanted to know, what do I need to do to follow you? And Jesus said, give away what you have to the poor. He couldn't do it. He could not do it. It's like catching a monkey in the wild. You put a banana in a jar, and that monkey reaches in, he grabs the banana, but now he can't get his hand back out, and he won't give up the banana. And the hunters come, and the monkey's squeaking and squalling and yelling, and he knows the end is coming, but he won't let go. He won't let go, and he dies with a squished banana in his hands. And that's the way we are. It can ruin our relationship with God. Eve's sin, back in the garden again, what did it cost her? Walking with God. James chapter 4 says, we desire and do not have, so we kill and covet. So it affects our relationships with one another. It affects our relationship even with the environment. Matthew 6, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, we can't serve God and mammon. There must be a letting go. There must be a letting go. So what's the solution? Well, number one, I would just encourage you today, realize that you are defined by your relationship with God, not your relationship with things, okay? By God. You are who you are because God created you as a beautiful woman, a wonderful, handsome man with tremendous gifts and talents. You are who you are because of who you created. You are not who you are based on what you can buy. Because when you get to heaven, all of that's going to be gone. You're not going to get to heaven and they're going to say, wow, I used to like hanging around with you when you had that Maserati, but here in heaven, you're kind of boring. No, we're not defined by what we have here and what we can buy, what our purchasing power is. We're defined by our relationship with God. Also, we have to change our relationship with things, don't we? This is another part of the solution. We got to change our relationship with money. We do. You see, money is to serve God. Money has been entrusted to us. It isn't ours. The things you own are not yours. You are a steward. And that's an important thing to remember, that we are stewards of what God has given us. We are stewards. An example of it would be like the Pope loaning you his car for a few years. If Pope Francis said, look, I'm gonna give you my car. I want you to take care of this for the next 5 years. Well, you would never walk around saying, look at my car. Look what I have. No, you'd say, I'm a steward. I'm taking care of something for the Pope. Well, all of that we have are gifts from God, and we are stewards. You're taking care of it for Him. So realize that you are defined by God and not by your relationship with things. Change the relationship with things. See them as something that you have been given to be a steward over. In other words, get a hold of this stewardship versus possessing. You don't possess it. You're a steward. You're a steward. Like Jesus said in Matthew 24, a wise steward is set over all the master's possessions. And think about it for a moment. Everything you have at home, in the garage, down in storage, in the basement, up in the attic, that place you're renting out for $200 a month to store all that stuff, that is not your possession. You're a steward. God may just be telling you to go give that to the poor, because why? Not that He doesn't want you to have it, but He wants the poor to have something. And maybe it's sitting in your storage shed right now. Also, hold things loosely as stewards. Hold things loosely. And here's another thing to think about, and that is true wealth. What is true wealth? True wealth is not things. It is not money. It is not temporal, but it is eternal. True wealth are eternal things. It's relationships that we have with people. It's righteousness. It's joy. It's peace. It's justice. It's mercy. These things are the valuable things. This is the coin that we're going after. This is the richness that we're really desiring. Another thing you can do in your family is you can put a real heavy emphasis on things, or on people and experiences rather than things. And when you bring up your children and you tell them that the real riches are what we can do with this money to help people and to bring peace and feed, that's a great example for our kids. And we can teach them what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6:33. He said, but seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things that the Gentiles worry about so much, these things will be added to you. So seek first the kingdom. What's the kingdom? Well, that's where Jesus is ruling and reigning. And where Jesus is ruling and reigning, there's not a lot of excess that's not necessary. It is not. You know, remember when He said, you know, the foxes have, you know, a place to sleep, but the Son of Man has no place to lay His head. He lived a simple life, didn't He? He was so unencumbered. He was so unencumbered by things and so free to do His Father's will. I think that's where you're at, to be honest with you. I think that's what you crave, really, down inside. I do. I think that you crave that relationship with God. And that's an important thing. Here's something that you can do, which I'll just share this with you real quickly. And if you can't write it down, you can do it and, you know, go back and listen to it again. But in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives an amazing little solution here on how to deal with what Eve faced and how to deal with consumerism. You can read about it in Matthew 6, and it goes through three forms of piety. You got almsgiving, prayer, and fasting. It's a great one to think about. This is how we combat consumerism. Almsgiving. What does it correspond to? Lust of the eyes. It's the lust of the eyes. So we exercise stewardship and divest ourselves of the world's treasure. How? By giving it away. Almsgiving. We give away this world's treasures to gain an eternal treasure. So almsgiving is one way of dealing with the lust of the eyes. Prayer. What is that? Well, prayer will combat the pride of life. And you know about the pride of life. I can do it myself. I can pull myself up by the bootstraps. I'm an American. I'm a self-made man. And yet, we are in need of wisdom, God's wisdom. So prayer combats the pride of life, makes you wise, you know? I'm a pretty wise guy. Well, no, you need prayer. You need to rely on God. And then the third is fasting. Give that a try. Fasting. You can fast food. You can fast drink. You can fast television, anything.
What does that combat? Lust of the flesh. These are all ways that we make idols. Lust of the flesh, pride of life, lust of the eyes. Start almsgiving, start prayer, start fasting. It's in Matthew 6. It's a great formula. Underline it in your Bible. Put it on an index card. Put it on your phone. Text yourself with it. Remind yourself that you have been given tremendous ability to fight this consumerism that we are all part of in the good old U.S. of A. Now let's turn our eyes towards Jesus. Wow, where did the hour go? There's so much to talk about here. Well, I hope that this has been helpful for you to help combat some of the consumerism, understanding where it came from and how you tick and some of the gifts that God has given us and to not only open our eyes to the reality of this, but to solve the problem. Going to take a break. When we come back, we got a lot of interesting things happening in the Twin Cities. We'll let you know about that. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour.
You've been talking about updating a bathroom in your home for months, maybe years, but didn't know who to call. I'm Jim Alberts of AJ Alberts Plumbing. After 26 years, our family business has grown to offer many products and services that add value, reliability, and style to your home. AJ Alberts is more than just plumbing. We can be your one-stop shop for complete kitchen and bath updates and convenience features like grab bars, roll-in showers, or walk-in tubs for safety at home. Our showroom in Woodbury features working displays of the latest high-quality plumbing fixtures, and we offer full kitchen and bath design service. We can also visit your home to help with design or other plumbing issues.
More than just plumbing, AJ Alberts provides a worry-free warranty for services, fixtures, fast-friendly service, and a quality job at a great price.
Whether we're installing a water heater, water softener, or performing complete updates that add value and convenience to your home, our attention to detail is second to none. Please call us at 651-738-0580. AJ Alberts Plumbing, there is a difference.
You can borrow.
And Paul, we got some really interesting things on the Rediscover Hour that are coming up.
Always. Just tons and tons. Rachel's Vineyard Twin Cities Retreats are open to anyone impacted by abortion. Women, men, grandparents, siblings, and healthcare professionals. If you or someone you love is grieving the loss of a child or children to abortion, come experience the compassionate mercy of Jesus Christ on the weekend retreat May 6th through 8, 2016 in the Twin Cities area. For more information, visit ourvineyardmn.org or the events page at archspm.org.
Start a new Mother's Day weekend tradition and honor your mom and all women who choose life. The Life is Wonderful Fun Run, Walk, and 5K race is a major fundraiser for Abrea Pregnancy Resources. All the fun happens on May 7th on Raspberry Island in St. Paul. There will be great food, music, activities for kids of all ages. The event starts at 9 a.m. and check-in begins at 7 a.m. For more information, visit supporters.abrea.org.
The month of May is dedicated to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Sunday, May 8th, you're invited to join in the Archdiocesan Family Rosary Procession in St. Paul. Bishop Cousins will lead the procession from the state capitol to the Cathedral of St. Paul. Assembly begins at 1:30 p.m. and the procession begins at 2. Those who can't walk the procession route can go directly to the cathedral to pray the rosary with those who are not in the procession. Find out more, visit familyrosaryprocession.org or visit the events page at archspm.org.
St. Michael's Parish in Farmington invites you to their Spring Fling event on Friday, May 13th. The event begins at 5:30 p.m. with games, a 50s costume contest, silent auction, and collectible cars on display, followed by dinner at 7:30 p.m. catered by Long Branch Saloon and Eatery. The cost is $50 per person. For more information and for tickets, call the parish office at 651-463-3360. That's 651-463-3360.
Best-selling author and speaker Father Michael Gately will lead a Mercy and Mary weekend retreat at the University of St. Thomas. June 10th through 12th. Spend a weekend in quiet prayer and join new talks by Father Gately, daily mass, adoration, comfortable accommodations, meals with the Marian missionaries, and much more. For more information, visit the events page at archspm.org. We're taking a hiatus next week, aren't we?
We are, and we do that every year at Relevant Radio. And that's,
we do it four times a year. As
yeah,
a
you do, don't you? And what we're talking about is it's an opportunity for people to get behind Relevant Radio. It's the big, what do you call it, the phone-a-thon or?
The pledge drive.
The pledge drive.
Yes. An opportunity to participate in the ministry of Relevant
Radio.
It
really is, isn't it? It gives people an opportunity to take their five loaves and their two fish, bring it to Jesus. You call it in, and he can take that five loaves and the two fish, which could look like $50, $100, even $25, $10,
everything helps.
Of dollars. But God takes it, and what does he do? He multiplies it and does absolutely wonderful things
indeed,
with it. And
indeed.
It's an amazing thing to think about, Paul, that we can sit here and we can give to the Lord, and people that we don't even know, their lives can be changed. And you've heard many stories about it.
I have. There have been tons of them.
Well, I invite you all to participate in the pledge drive and give and change the world. This is Jeff Cavins on the Rediscover Hour. Look forward to talking to you next time.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.